This is BPN Radio, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. It's time now for the Christian War Room with your host, Michael Schonborn. Now, here's Michael.
Thank you, Dale, and thank you for the introduction. We are now looking at a very interesting subject. In Europe, we've had an Islamic invasion. In Germany alone, about 1 million people in 2015 migrated to Germany from Islamic countries. And suddenly problems which have never been seen before start rising up. And one of them is we had the event on New Year's Eve from 2015 to 2016 that there were up to about 1,000 rapes at the New Year's celebration throughout Germany. Cologne was the biggest event, and then about 600 reported sexual attacks were recorded in Cologne. Similar things, which has not been that much in the news, were in Hamburg and in other places in Germany. So what we find is that there's been a big problem with the immigration. Modern secularism, secular humanism says, you know, it's all okay, we have to do this, and these people are welcome, they have to come in, and yet there's very little to oppose them. We've got more issues in Germany since this time. There's been a Sharia police in Wuppertal, where self-appointed policemen, Islamic policemen, go around and try to enforce Sharia law in the areas where they live. Now, this has all been challenged in court, and the court says there's nothing they can do about this. They are free to go around and to harass people to abide by Sharia law. Very shocking what is going on in Europe. Now, we've got two people here on BPN Radio and on Seismic Radio, and it's an interview between Stefan Molyneux and Eben Threnholm. They both introduce themselves in a minute, and they sort of discuss this whole problem the West has with the confrontation with Islam. And it's very important, you know, in the Christian War Room to look at these issues. One of the conclusions they make is that our society, our culture, has been removed from a Christian culture and turned into something else, and has been pushed towards secular humanism. It's something that's been happening in America as well, albeit something delayed, or somewhat delayed. But we need to look at this, and we need to look at the consequence of secular humanism and the destructive power it has for our cultures. Now, the answer is very simple. It's very straightforward. We need to return back to Christ, and we need to oppose the Islamic onslaught onto the West by using the message of the gospel. My vision for this whole thing is we need to get the gospel into these Islamic communities which are coming into our countries, and we need to, as Christians, see it as an opportunity to reach out with the gospel to these people and to lead them to Christ. It should be so fearsome that people in the Middle East, that Muslims in the Middle East, will not send their kids and their people to the West for fear that they turn Christian. And that's stage number one, which we need to go. Stage number two is we need to go right into the Middle East and preach the gospel to those guys out there and bring in the destruction of Islam. Okay, let's listen to Eben Threnholm and Stefan Molyneux.
Hi, everybody. This is Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Radio. I hope you're doing well. Very pleased to have Eben Threnholm. She is an award-winning Dutch journalist, a former editor and radio host with the Danish Broadcasting Corporation, and has recently written extensively on the European migrant crisis. We'll link to a couple of her videos below. She is a passionate advocate for all the stuff we're going to get into during this conversation. So, Eben, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so my background is European, though I currently live in Canada, and particularly in America, of course, currently consumed with the machinations of the presidential nomination process, not seeing as much, I think, of what is going on in Europe, certainly that you see, I think, more perceptively than most of the Europeans that I've talked to. What is the big picture of what is happening, and what do people outside of Europe need to understand that they're not getting now?
I think the Europeans are starting to understand that our politicians are not capable of protecting us. I mean, the recent terror attack in Brussels, I think it really woke up people a lot, because there has been a lot of surveillance exactly in this city, and there has even been some kind of training for if a new terrorist attack would happen, and yet it happened. And it seems that people are starting to understand that what our politicians are trying to promise us is not going to happen. They repeat over and over again, democracy is going to win this fight or this war, but we are seeing the opposite, that we are losing it, and we don't have control over the situation. So I think all Europeans right now have a sense of a deeper crisis, and this problem is much more serious than we thought. In the beginning, you know, I come from Denmark, which is the land of the Muhammad cartoons. We thought in the beginning we could fight this evil just with freedom of speech. Now, last week, our politicians actually are ready to pass a law where, you know, imams that would preach hatred and fundamentalism and be very extreme and radical, that they can be expelled from the country. So this is a completely new thing. They're going to, you know, actually make laws against freedom of speech because of this problem. So things are changing a lot, and nobody really knows where Europe is going to, I mean, where things are going to end right now. And I think people here are very insecure. They feel that our politicians are not able to protect us in the right way and protect our borders. So, you know, it's really a deep crisis here.
What do you think are these specific, because I run a philosophy show, so when I look at a problem, I always try and get to the errors or misapprehensions or confusions that are at the root of how problems manifest socially. Do you have a sense of what mistakes are made in thinking that have led to this kind of crisis?
Yeah, I think right now people understand that it's not only a matter of trying to get more surveillance, more control. We need to ask some deeper questions. How come that these radical movements, these radical people are actually growing in number in Europe? How come that they don't want to have a free democratic society like we have? So we have to ask ourselves some questions. And I think one of the biggest mistakes is actually that we don't want to acknowledge that there is a religious, that there is a kind of religious issue here, because Europe is very secular. So we don't really see people who have a religion as somebody who is, you know, a true democrat and a modern person. But that's wrong, because modernity is full of religion. We see that everywhere in the world, except from Europe. So we don't understand that many of those very violent people, those terrorists, they actually have a religious or cultural reason for doing this. And we don't want to address this. We hear over and over again the same sound bites from our politicians, that Islam is a peaceful religion. It has nothing to do with religion. And we see, yesterday I saw a new kind of investigation that shows, I think it was like 40,000 people that has been asked, that those people who are very religious, Muslims that are very religious, they actually tend to be more violent. And we don't want to face those facts. So I think that we are using the wrong means to fight terrorism. And this is the real problem of Europe, is that we lack values to fight this evil. It's not a matter of military force. It's not a matter of surveillance, because it is, you know, a mindset that we have to go against. And we certainly don't have the right tools to do this. And I think the confrontation with radical Islam in Europe shows us that post-modernity has failed. All the post-modern values has failed, because they're simply not strong enough to defeat this evil. And this is the real problem in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when I was in grad school, post-modernism seemed to me more a negative than a positive. In other words, it seemed to be in opposition to all of the traditional Western values, and a sort of celebration of the other. So it seemed to me more nihilistic than positive in its approach. And when Europeans, of course, like most of us, have become less religious, more secular, more materialistic, more hedonistic, you could almost say. I think it's hard for Europeans to understand what it means to be dedicated to an eschatological large cause, much bigger than you, that you may be willing to sacrifice your life for, because such demands have not been made on Europeans for generations.
No, I think right now Europe are seeing the consequences of, you know, has turned its back on its Christian roots. Because, you know, Islam has tried for centuries to defeat Europe, but they never succeeded because there was this Christian unity, there was this strong Christian faith. We have to defeat those people. We have to keep them outside our borders. And there were a kind of unity in Europe because of the Christian faith that we lost. There were also other moral values. Right now, as you say, it's hedonistic, it's very selfish society. Everybody's just thinking about their own happiness. And we have legalized a lot of postmodern values, like, you know, kind of completely corruption of the family. People are getting divorced. The legalization of homosexual marriages. So it's a kind of culture that is, you know, abortion and also euthanasia now. It is a kind of culture that is not really, maybe you could even say it's a kind of the culture of death. And it means that when you don't have a culture that is built on true values, values that promote life, sooner or later this society will collapse because it's built on something that is not true. And I think that post-modernity was a kind of illusion, a kind of lie in a way. And now we see that it's not strong enough to defeat this radical Islam. So I don't think if Europe is not going to wake up and return to its Christian roots, it's not going to look very good. It's going to look really bad for Europe. Because you have to keep in mind that all the old Christian kingdoms like North Africa, Minor Asia, the Holy Land, all those areas are now, they used to be, you know, huge and strong Christian kingdoms. Today, they're all Islamic. So it means that why not Europe? I mean, Europe are inviting those people themselves. So it's a really, but I think a lot of people have not acknowledged this problem yet, but sooner or later they will.
Well, syllogistically, you know, philosophically, it's a very easy problem to solve because people say that tolerance and multiculturalism is a value. And okay, there's arguments about that, but let's just say that that's true. If tolerance and multiculturalism are a value, then how do we evaluate cultures that are intolerant and against multiculturalism? And that to me is simple. So saying, well, multiculturalism is a value, therefore we should invite intolerant and anti-diversity cultures into a multicultural society, that's like a 10-second argument, and it seems it's really frustrating to those of us sort of trained in logical thought how a 10-second argument that could save European civilization simply refuses to be discussed in any significant public sphere.
Yeah, but that's also because of the lack of masculinity. Like I wrote in one of my op-eds that one of the problems with the migrant crisis is actually the lack of real men. It means that all the old heroic virtues like courage and honor, self-reliance and self-discipline and all those old values, they're lost. It means that the culture is getting weak and we're just acting like mothers want to be care for people, inclusive and all this. And, you know, it's nice, but this political situation is a completely different situation. So it means that we're going to destroy ourselves if we don't step up like real men and, you know, have a kind of iron fist to say, stop, we're not going to deal with this. But this is not the ideology right now in Europe, because it's very politically correct to have all those inclusive values. But I think there is a big gap between our politicians and the people in Europe. And more people in Europe, they see that you need a different political approach than what our politicians are actually promoting. And I don't know how long it's going to take for the politicians to change their mind, because many of them will not be reelected if they continue like this. And I think it's a very tense situation that the people are so far away from the politicians that there is this big gap. And that in the end, it could mean a civil war, you know, because people are then trying to take up arms themselves just to defend themselves. So it can be a very, very tense situation. But I think that the multicultural project, you know, in theory it's fine, but in practice you see that it's deadly. It's deadly for our culture. And sooner or later, I think somebody will have to face it and act accordingly.
So even when I was growing up in the 70s, and you sort of talk about masculine values and falling away from Europe, but when I was growing up in the 70s, there was endless waves of propaganda that I even got as a kid, you know, male chauvinist pigs and patriarchy and, you know, man bad, woman good, rinse and repeat. So it seems to me that after a couple of generations of at least the popular culture, the mainstream media and so on, really viciously denigrating traditional male values, it seems almost impossible that there would be a find a way to resurrect them, particularly if it's like, well, men, we need you now, so now we're going to like you. I mean, there may be a certain amount of skepticism on the part of men to join that after so much abuse has been heaped upon men.
Well, I think reality will teach us to come back to those values. You know, I also wrote that we need a male revolution in Europe to come back to the real virtues. And I think, unfortunately, I think we're going to see more terrorism. And I think in the end, people will be desperate to do something. So maybe that will wake up the real male virtues again. But, you know, it's just very tragic that it has to be so... That we need to face a kind of catastrophe before people will wake up. But I think, I mean, already now, you could see people even from, people that normally would be on the left wing, they start to say, close the borders, because this is not going to, you know, this is not going to, it cannot continue like this. And just 1 year ago, you would hear the same people say, well, we should just welcome all the refugees, all the migrants, no problem. But today, at least in Denmark, you see more and more people say, stop it. We don't want this. Unfortunately, our politicians are not saying the same. But they will be, I think there will be more and more pressure on the politicians. And in the end, I think when people are threatened and they are afraid to die or to get killed, they will act.
It's terrible for all thinkers that disaster tends to be the only thing that motivates people rather than rational and empirical arguments that could help avert disaster. But that's perhaps a topic for another time. Is there I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but I think people are so much into this kind of illusion that, you know, everybody can just have a nice time together if we have dialogue. Because what is very characteristic for the secular humanism is that it doesn't believe in evil, because they think basically if you give people a nice house and a job and a car, you know, there is no evil and you can just have a dialogue and everybody is nice. And this is the big failure in secular humanism. It doesn't really understand that there is something that is evil just because it is evil, you know, because it has, you know, lost the sense of spirituality. And in the spiritual world, there are evil forces that are just evil because they're evil. And you can't fight them just with democracy. It takes another spirituality to fight them. And this is the real problem in Europe, is that they don't really understand that evil exists and they don't acknowledge it right now.
Yeah, I think most people on the left and even some on the right would say that it is economic determinism that forges human nature. And therefore, people who are hostile, they're dysfunctional, it is because they lack resources. And so if we take people from Africa, North Africa or the Middle East, we put them in Europe, we give them resources, they will magically change. And the idea that human nature or culture or history or religion or community or tribalism or racialism, the idea that this vanishes like human beings are just water and you pour them into various containers and they just take the shape of that container. It's the idea that there are fundamental embedded ideologies transmitted through thousands or I guess in Islam 1400 years. The idea that it's not just going to change when people cross from one border to another. I find that incomprehensible, this idea that we're just so moldable, like clay on a potter's wheel. Oh, it's just, you know, and the idea that all dysfunction results from a lack of resources is false. I mean, the majority of terrorists are middle class. I mean, this is the argument should not even exist.
Yeah, but that's because of this kind of relativism. It means that there is no truth anymore. It's just a matter of, you know, everything can go together. And I mean, one truth is just like the other truth. And this is also because of the lack of the Christian tradition. It means that you don't have any kind of discernment anymore to understand what is right, what is wrong, what is false, what is good. And this, I think, now we see the consequences of this attitude that there is no truth anymore. So it means that there are certain truths, and then we got to face the consequences like we're doing now.
Yeah, I certainly think that every rejection of objective values leads to an endless series of compromises and appeasement until crisis occurs. And then people magically rediscover universal values, absolute truth, absolute morality. And we, of course, hope it's not too late at that point. Now, what about it sort of has struck me, even that the EU, like the European Union experiment, seems to be going particularly awry in this area, right? I mean, I sort of think, you know, if Greece hadn't been part of the EU, they wouldn't have had the EU's credit. They wouldn't have been able to run up so much debts. They wouldn't have ended up with this huge resentment against the EU's central bank refusing to bail them out for the third or fourth time or whatever it was. They would have had more of a sense of national unity, national pride. They wouldn't have lost their feelings of sovereignty to, you know, distant banks in Brussels or whatever, and they may have actually defended their borders rather than sort of giving it up. And that's just one sort of the many dominoes that has led to this problem. Is there any sense where you are and the people you talk to that the EU needs to be reevaluated, particularly, of course, the Schengen and the open border side?
I don't think people, at least not here in Northern Europe, has a lot of confidence in the EU. Actually, we have very many skeptics here that are not very happy with the EU Union. And I think people are afraid exactly that decisions will be made and they will suffer from it because they don't have any kind of sovereignty anymore. And I don't know the future, but I don't think it's unlikely that it will be dissolved somehow because people don't believe in this project. And at least here in Denmark, people never believed in it. And we don't have the euro as well. And we're very skeptical towards it. And I think now we see that they're not capable of you know, holding Europe together in a kind of unity that works. So I think if they don't, if they're not able to cope with this crisis and it's just going to get worse, I think the EU Union would face a deep crisis too, because how should people be confident in it anymore?
Right, right. Now, it seems that you referred to them earlier, sort of female values, and I get that we're putting, you know, everyone in a big bucket. There's lots of exceptions, but sort of female values of sentimentality and to some degree emotion over, you know, hard empiricism and so on seems to be dominating, or at least until recently has dominated the political discourse in Europe. And I haven't really heard much from men, at least, you know, there are male politicians, but they're generally following the more engaged female voting patterns. Do you think that it may be an imbalance in sort of the overabundance of female sentimentality that may be leading towards these kinds of problems?
I think because there has this been this feminist war on masculinity for decades. And it means that many, many males here in Europe, they don't know how to be male. I mean, many of them were brought up by mothers from the 68 movement that wanted their boys to be like women. So they were actually they were taught how to be women, not men. And that has left many men very insecure about the masculine nature. So they don't know how to be men. And that's also why we have so many divorces, because many men do not know how to be the head of the family. They don't know how to respond as a man. And, you know, the nature in many women, they're very masculine, many women, but yet they're also very feminine. So they want a man to be responsible and to be a man. And when he cannot, I mean, she doesn't want to spend time with him. So it means that many men, they don't really, you know, there is a huge crisis for many men here because they don't know what is masculinity. And I think we see also this in our politicians and the way that they behave. For instance, here, our Minister of Justice, he is, you know, he's a man you could see with almost tears in his eyes on the TV screen when he's interviewed about how he thinks that we should care for the refugees and, you know, we have to be this kind of, you know, good people. And for instance, a couple of months ago, we had a huge crowd of refugees and migrants that came to Denmark because they wanted to pass the country to go further on to Sweden. And they were walking on the highway, which is forbidden in Denmark. But the police just gave up and, you know, they could not force the law on them. And this minister said, okay, we have to let those people walk on the highway. And he was so, you know, he was so emotional. He said, look, we're good people. We're doing this. The fact is, we don't know how many ISIS terrorists went with this crowd. So nobody knows what's going on in the country. So it means that they were acting like a mother, you know, that was just being, that were just wanted to be, you know, nice to her children. Not like men who said, well, there is law in this country. You have to follow the law. And if you don't do that, we're going to arrest you and you will be put to jail. This is normally what a man would do. But these politicians, they acted like soft mothers, said, just let them pass. We don't even want to register them because we should be good people. And if you ask any critical questions, you will be called a racist or a bad person or a fascist. So nobody wants to criticize anything. And I think it's also this political correctness that is still here. So it means you can't ask any, you can't raise any critical questions because then you are a bad person. And these politicians, they are promoting a culture of like Europe is like a battered wife, you know, that keeps the door open to this violent husband that he can come back again and again and again, and she will always excuse him. This is the way we are actually dealing with the situation, I think.
Oh, yeah. With regards to crime within Denmark, I know, of course, that Sweden, I think, is now second only to South Africa in the rape capital of the world, or close to it. And of course, the vast majority of these rapes are being committed by migrants. I mean, one in three African men has admitted to being a rapist in their home countries. And so it seems to me that there is this tidal, genuine rape, not the sort of made up feminist stuff, but the genuine rape culture sort of pouring into Europe. Is there, in people's daily lives, is there a sense of concern or danger, or are the migrant communities still so self-segregated that they're not affecting people's general lives outside of the no-go zones or the ghettos or wherever they are?
Well, it's much worse in Sweden than it is in Denmark. And unfortunately, the police told women in Sweden a couple of weeks ago that they should not go alone in the streets. They should not, you know, no, they should always go together, be together with another person and not, you know, be on their own in the street. I think that's incredible that the police lack resources to protect the women. And now the women have to protect themselves, or they have to ask somebody to come to join them if they're going somewhere. But I think we will face the same situation here in Denmark very soon, because there is this kind of, you know, very soft approach by our politicians. And I think it's incredible. It's incredible that the police is just telling the women to take care of themselves, not to try to get, you know, control over the situation. And unfortunately, we also have those parallel societies here in Denmark, and it's just growing and growing. And there are zones here where the police really do not have any control. And it's everywhere in Europe that you see that those societies are actually on the rise. And that's very worrisome.
For the past half hour, you've been listening to the Christian War Room with host Michael Sean Bourne. For more information on how you can participate or find out more about the Christian War Room, simply go to ChristianWarRoom.com. That's ChristianWarRoom.com.